It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Just over a week ago, three students and three staff members died in a shooting at the private Christian Covenant School in Nashville, Tennessee. Survivors and the families and friends of the dead are still processing what happened, and there's still a lot we don't know. The shooting, though, has once again revived decades-old discussions around mass shootings and violence in our society. School shootings continue to feature prominently in our political and cultural landscape. I can say the words Uvalde, Parkland, Sandy Hook, Columbine. You immediately know what I'm talking about. Julie Weber has explored the societal ramifications of all this in her work. She's a professor of politics and government at Illinois State University in Normal, and she's written two books on violence in American schools. The first was published in 2002. It's called Failure to Hold: The Politics of School Violence. And the second, from 2019, is Beyond Columbine: School Violence and the Virtual. Professor Weber joins us now. Welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Professor, I want to begin. You've said this in the past. I've pulled this quote from a 2017 article in the Pantograph newspaper that Columbine is the template that shooters since then have built on. Can you say more about that?
Yes. Since Columbine, and I think, you know, there was a break there, I argue, between 99 and 2005, where there weren't too many of these attacks. And one reason was there was a media closeout on coverage due to the Iraq War and the invasion of Afghanistan. But by 2005, they start up again, and they begin to, I don't want to say mimic because I don't like that word, but they begin to cite Columbine, each larger attack. And so the perpetrators, they often cite previous shootings, usually Columbine. They use set props, poses, accoutrements, and equipment. And the point that I make is that these instances are methodic. And what that means is each one attempts to add to the ritual gameplay established at Columbine and then outdo the last attack. So that could mean a higher victim range. It could mean certain poses that they'll do when they get to the scene. And so Columbine becomes the template, and that's pretty much what most of them cite. I see a little bit in this recent case in Nashville, to this, you know, to the extent that the perpetrator was collecting guns. There's a lot of collecting and more ammunition than they need at the scene. This is something that happened at Columbine too. Often they might try to blow something up at the scene. That always fails. And so Columbine really does become this kind of online, and they get the information online, this kind of online resource for someone who may want to bring their rage at an institution like a school or a civil society organization when they commit suicide, usually.
Yeah. And I should say there's a lot about this Covenant shooting that we still don't know, but it does seem to fit so far based on what we've learned, the template that you're describing.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's definitely, you know, the plan was to die at the end. I mean, that's very clear with the note. The clothing, you know, and the collecting of the guns. And this one was different in the sense that I think it's Hale, shot at the police as they arrived. And it reminded me a little bit of Columbine. But they had turned their guns on each other. There were two at Columbine. That's the only time that's ever really happened. So I do see a lot of similarities between the two.
Okay, we're gonna take a break on the program. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Professor Julie Weber from Illinois State University, who's been studying school shootings for more than 20 years. Obviously, we're talking about this in light of what happened last week in Nashville. If you want to join our conversation, if you have a comment or question on this, maybe you are a parent of a student. What do you think about how our society is responding to this ongoing problem? 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the problem of school shootings after the shooting last week at the Christian Covenant School in Nashville. And we're talking about this with Julie Weber, who is a professor of politics and government at Illinois State University, has studied school shootings for 20 years now. And you can join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Professor Weber, after these shootings, I can think back to Columbine 20 years ago. There was a lot of talk about movies and video games, other aspects of pop culture. What do you think about that? Do you still hear that as much? Have we moved on from that? How does that work in these conversations?
Well, we've definitely moved on from that. I mean, that first era, that was like around 1996 through 99, up until Columbine. I think they did kind of act out these kind of scripts of masculinity that were, you know, provided by the media. But you know, I mean, it's hard to say that, you know, a film or a song, for example, you know, can influence an entire generation, you know, of people. It might influence a few people who are particularly attached to it. And often they interpret them incorrectly. But by the time we get to Columbine, that's not really the case anymore. So, yeah, they had all those White House meetings in the 90s when Clinton was president about video gaming and corporate movies and a little bit about gun policy, but not too much. And then by the time we get to Columbine, it changes a bit. And after Columbine, it becomes more about learning about how these shootings take place online. And then, you know, as I say, Columbine becomes sort of the template for the ones that follow.
What about the role of the media in this? I mean, you mentioned there was the Iraq War sort of blackout on other news, and that, mm-hmm. I mean, that seemed to make a measurable difference. But is the media attention to these incidents? Are we part of the problem right now today talking about this?
I don't think anymore. I think, you know, it might have been back then, but now it's the internet. And I wouldn't call for a monitoring of the internet. I'd never do that. But I do think that that this generation is completely online on social media. And social media is where they get most of the information. I actually think that the print and TV and radio media have done a really good job in the last few years of not mentioning lots of things about the attacks and not mentioning a lot about the perpetrators. So I would give them props for that. But it's really now, if we want to talk about now, most of the, you know, so these, what I'm saying, I guess, is that it's the same kind of template as Columbine, but they mutate because they're trying to succeed. So now they get their information online. They're trying to outdo the police. They're trying to outdo the safety and security that's been, you know, put at school or the shopping mall, because now they're no longer just at schools. They're at all kinds of civil society organizations, this is what they're targeting. They're targeting civil society organizations. And in my book, I argue that they're an attack on civil society itself.
Say more about that. What does that mean?
Okay, so civil society, if we want to think about it, is it used to be, right, constructed by culture or associations, right, like work associations.
Or your Elks Lodge, your labor union, that sort of
sure.
thing.
Sure, yep, yeah. Labor unions. And now it's constructed largely by consumption because we don't have many public spaces anymore, since most things have been sold off to the private sector. And so it used to be that civil society was there to monitor the state and monitor the private sector. But now it's mostly, civil society is mostly the private sector. So if you think about it, it's like, where are you going to meet somebody? You're probably not going to meet them at school or at church. You're probably going to meet them at Starbucks, for example, right? So as we have less and less public spaces, and as more of what happens that would be civil society or the social happens online, it's also monitored. So that's kind of a problem too. So civil society is where people meet, and often these perpetrators don't really, they're in these institutions, schools, universities, right? They don't fit somehow. Something happens. They've been traumatized, something's happened, and they don't feel like there was ever an adequate outcome to what happened to them, and they can't get over it. And so that's why I say they're sort of attacking civil society. Because people are now afraid to meet, right? To assemble.
Yeah, no, they certainly, you certainly do think twice about it. Whether it was, I mean, I experienced that myself last year at the Independence Day fireworks in the city where I live, obviously after that terrible shooting in Highland Park. You talked about attempts to evade some of the things that have been put in place to make schools safe, metal detectors and locker searches, for example. You've also talked about how those have created other problems. Say more about that.
Well, so that one problem that, or one solution to one problem then becomes, you know, that once that's outwitted by the perpetrators, then now there's a new solution, right? And that's just how school security has become a multi-billion dollar industry. And so, now we no longer, we know that like locker searches or metal detectors, you know, might help, metal detectors might help at a concert or something, but they're not going to help probably in school, because now it seems like most of the shooters end up not coming from the school itself. They're from the alumni, or, or they're from, they used to go to the school. So like Tuesdays was, you know, the person was 28 years old and had gone to the school as an elementary student. Same with Sandy Hook. So you can't say that you know that the person who might come to make an attack on your school is from the current student body. That creates whole new problems, right, for the school security industry to try to solve. So so it's what creates this larger and larger and larger business. And most people are starting to sort of become disillusioned about it, too, because I think what happened on Tuesday was, too, that he shot through the glass at the front of the school. And the door was locked. So and these were sort of, you know, the previous security measures. It's not like the school hadn't done the best that it could within existing, you know, security, what's available for security. So I just, it creates a new problem. Now there'll be a new way that they have to think about it.
Is all this, are all these security measures actually making people safer? Or is this sort of the way people talk about removing our shoes in the airports, you know, security theater?
I think a lot of it is security theater. And I understand it because I've had kids in school. And so you just don't know, right, when and where it's going to happen. So security theater is kind of problematic, but it's also, you know, we're talking about a lot of times children, young children. I think of Uvalde. I think of those parents, right, who are standing outside and wondering why the police aren't doing anything. These kinds of episodes can really cause anxiety in the general population, I think, right? So a lot of the security, yes, it's probably theater, but it may be necessary to make people feel better.
Yeah. I've often thought to myself, like, yes, okay, airport security does seem like theater, but if I'm given a choice of a completely libertarian, no security flight in one where we have to do the theater, I think I'm probably going to choose the theater even in that case. You know, you mentioned the sort of the anxiety this can produce in the general population. You still, I imagine, teach a 101 course with 18 and 19 year olds who are fresh out of high school in some cases. What effect have you seen on generations that have grown up in which Columbine is history? They have no memory of a pre-Columbine world.
No, they don't. And they're completely online and completely on social media. I don't even know if they would know what privacy was, like real physical privacy, to be honest with you. And I don't know that they know that it's something they should miss. And so that's something that I would say that is kind of problematic. A lot of them are kind of, they're a little bit, maybe a little bit more bold than you and I. They scoff.
Well, that was ever thus, right?
They make fun of security theater, right? So, I mean, I think they think, well, I just want to live my life, you know, and they're different. They're a lot different. But they're not as scared as they were 10 years ago, I wouldn't say. I think they're a little more bold.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, my father used to have this expression, 10 feet tall and bulletproof, to describe teenagers. Yeah, maybe that's a little too on point here. But what I get so frustrated. The script is always the same after we have these incidents. Public officials come out, we need to ban guns versus the, we'll never ban guns. How do we break out of the infinite loop of the conversations that always take place after these incidents?
This is an awesome question. Okay, so I have this mapped out here a little bit because I've been thinking about this. So the other day, I guess they interviewed the president, right? Because everybody tends to sort of look to the president first and say, what are you going to do about it? Even though they don't know that there's a Congress and a Senate. And, these things have to be introduced by the Congress. And so President Biden said, I've done all I can. And he wasn't lying. He really has done all he can. He needs Congress to present him with legislation in order to be able to do anything. And they're not going to. So there was an interesting interview that I saw on CNN with Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, who I guess is like the leader of a Yale corporate responsibility program. And they were talking about how since Uvalde, corporate CEOs and groups of CEOs have, issued condemnations and have stopped selling guns, like Dick's stopped selling guns. And I guess Walmart stopped selling ammunition for handguns. And so this person said, everyone's been quiet about gun reform, especially CEOs. And then Jeffrey Sonnenfeld said, where is everybody else? Where is all of civil society, right? CEOs are just one group of people. And it's like we're turning to them to be our saviors on every topic, right? The social change that happened in the 60s wasn't being led primarily by CEOs. Social changes really happened with interfaith activity of clergy and canvassing legislators. And where is all the student activism? Well, I have an answer for that. So if civil society is kind of that space between work and home, that's third space, right? That's not the state too necessarily. First, we had a pandemic. So people are very afraid about being out in public during the pandemic.
Although they did rise up for after George Floyd, we saw a lot of people out
there.
That's true.
But we did have a pandemic. But I also would argue that it's the very problem with corporations, right? Because corporations actually have more control over this because they own most of what used to be public space. And I don't think that they're aware of this, right? I mean, I don't know where people would go for a kind of association that we require from civil society, if not to a corporation. It would need to be led by a corporation. And as far as student activism goes, I think we try very hard at the university, but, students are sometimes working two and three jobs to try and pay off their student loans or to try and stay in school. In the 1960s, nobody had student loans, and they had free time. People had free time and they had privacy. They could develop associations in public and not feel afraid. And the other thing that I think is true is that the shootings themselves, sort of lead to the destruction of civil society because people don't want to meet. People no longer want to send their kids to public schools or what the right is now calling government schools. And we have a real crisis in terms of what we call civil society. So I guess my response would be to Sonnenfeld is that, well, where is civil society? There is no civil society. It's corporate.
It's corporate. Wow. Well, that is not a very optimistic note, but this is not a very optimistic time on this topic. So unfortunately, we are out of time for our program and conversation today. And Julie Weber, this has been very interesting. And I am sorry to say that I'm sure we will have to have this conversation again, and I hope you'll be able to join us as we continue to think through these things. Thank you for being here. And that is all the time we have for the 21st show today. As ever, we would love to hear what you think about what we have been talking about on the program today or on any topic in the recent past. If you like it, if you didn't like it, if you think we got something wrong, for whatever reason, let us know. You can leave a voicemail anytime, day or night. The number for that is 217-300-2121, 217-300-2121. We would love to hear from you, and we will be sharing some of your responses on air from time to time. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to take a deep dive into the results of the municipal elections in various cities around Illinois, including Champaign, Springfield, Carbondale, and of course, Chicago. Plus, we'll have an update from reporters who have been covering that trial of the Commonwealth Edison executives and lobbyists with major implications for former House Speaker Michael Madigan. That's all coming up tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again on Wednesday.